Welcome to City Professional English Podcasts, podcast number 26, The Time It Takes to Say Thank You. When some people walk through the entrance to their work, they change. What were perfectly decent, kind and generous people at home become hard, inhospitable users of the power hierarchy. Nowadays, being a highly successful professional means being effective and having solid relationships. This podcast aims to give guidance on some of the ways in which it has become important not to treat our professional behaviour so different from our private behaviour. I hope you enjoy this podcast and find it useful. Before beginning today's podcast on the subject, I'd like to thank you for listening to the podcast. We're up to now 28,000 listeners on the last podcast, podcast number 25, and we're growing by each podcast at a rate of 20%. If we keep that up, due to the wonderful mechanism, as Warren Buffett says, of compound interest, in another 6 months, we'll be up to over 2.5 million listeners. So thank you very much for listening to my podcasts. So today, the time it takes to say thank you. Funny enough, I didn't actually plan that beginning. As you know, this is all unscripted. It just came to me to thank you for listening to the podcast. And the reason that I wanted to do this podcast today was two reasons. The first of which is I have two young sons, and the two words which I have to continually remind them to use are please and thank you. They're almost as if they're the most difficult words to remember as a child. And unfortunately, they seem to be some of the most difficult words to remember as adults. And that's what we're going to talk about today. But the reason or the catalyst for this podcast wasn't my children. It was some of the meetings that I had last week with some of my clients. In my role, in my job, I go to a lot of companies to visit clients. And last week I had the fortune to go to two different companies within the same day, in fact within the same morning. And the difference between the two was startling. And I want to relate that, this experience, to you to give you an idea of where this podcast came from. In the first company I went to, I arrived. It took me about an hour to drive there, and I arrived. It was relatively early in the day. I think it was 9:30, and I got there. And I got to the reception desk, and I walked in. It was the first time I'd been to this company. I walked in, and the receptionist sitting behind a glass encasement, as it were, as if you were in a bank, didn't look at me, was busy doing her work on the computer. And when she finally did look at me as I approached, she had a huge frown on her face. Now, for those who are not mother tongue English speakers, please look up the word frown, F-R-O-W-N. You know those horrible emoticons, I think they're called, or smileys, I think they're called? It's the opposite to the smileys. It's when the face, the mouth, makes the shape of an N. So she was frowning. And I had to ask her, you know, the name of the person I wanted to see, and so on and so forth. Later in that day, I went to another client, another company, and it was late morning, so around about 11 o'clock, and I walked in, and at the reception desk, which was open, There was no glass separating me from the receptionist. The lady there, as I walked through the main doorway, looked at me, and you know what she did? She smiled. Not an exaggerated smile like the Joker from the Batman movies, just a little smile. And as I walked towards her, she asked me if she could help me. Now, funny enough, after these two meetings, in the first one, when the receptionist who frowned had invited me or told me to go to a certain office, and I was walking there, because this was rather a large company, I lost my way. I didn't really know exactly where I was going. Now remember, I'm dressed in a suit. I've got lots of grey hair. I have a briefcase. So I look like, well, I hope I give the impression, because impressions count, of being a professional. I'm walking through a corridor, and obviously on my face, you can see that I'm not exactly sure of where I am. I had three people in that first company walk past me, and nobody asked me if they could help me, if I was lost, if I needed to find someone. No one. And that leaves a tremendous impression upon a visitor to a company. Because the people walking through the corridors are going to meet visitors, and these visitors could be very important. I mean, I'm not important, but they could be directors or the owners even, the foreign owners of the company walking through the corridor. And that's a fantastic opportunity for you to ask people if you can help and make a great impression on people who could be very important. But actually, even if they're not important, it's just the professional and courteous thing to do. So next time you're walking through your corridor at work and you see someone who's obviously lost, spend 1 minute seeing if you can help them. The thing about receptionist is the reception is the first point of contact for many visitors to a company, and it's extremely important in terms of the impression it gives to the company. A lot of companies spend quite a deal of money on making the reception area look fantastic, but at the end of the day, it's the behavior of the receptionist themselves who makes the difference and starts the whole experience of coming to visit that company in the right frame of mind. So the question really is, looking at these two examples, the first receptionist who frowned at me and the second receptionist who smiled, what's the difference? So let me put you in the case of if you were the manager of these two receptionists. The first thing I'd like to ask you is, what would you ask yourself? So if you were the manager or a manager and you had seen this behavior by the receptionist, what would you ask yourself? Well, I hope, in a sense, and certainly if you're trying to improve your own capabilities at work as a manager, and you're trying to go from being a manager to an executive to being at the top flight of your company, and therefore becoming a leader, this wonderful idea of the transformation of people into great leaders, and are leaders born, are they, or are they made? I think they're made. I hope you ask yourself, why is that first receptionist who's frowning, why is she doing that? And why is the other one who's smiling doing that? What is the difference between these two people? If you happen to be the manager of, particularly the first example, the lady who frowned, what you could do, of course, you could ask them, rather than trying to work it out yourself, which would take quite a lot of time, although reflecting upon your own performance, not every day as a manager because you're very busy, but say every 3 months, doing your own type of self-performance review and not waiting for these ridiculous 360 annual performance things that companies do, is a good idea. Reflecting upon your behavior, your performance, is one of the quickest ways to wisdom, as Confucius says. But what you could do is you could ask her, you could say to her, what am I doing as your manager which is stopping you excelling in your job? When I've asked this in the past, and it's very funny, if you asked someone who works for you, if you say, you know, what am I doing which is stopping you excelling? The first reaction is they're shocked. And it's such a wonderful thing to see, in a sense, because of their experience in the past of managers. And it's unfortunate that I have to say this, but because of their experience in the past, they never have a manager who comes to them and says, what am I doing wrong? How can I improve? How can I make it? And I'm not talking about every day again. I'm talking about every 3 months, maybe every 6 months, not every day, but they ask. And usually the first answer is they're shocked and they say nothing, of course. And then you tell them to go away and have a think about it, and you talk again in the next week. So that's what I hope you're asking yourself as to what's making the difference. And what could you say to her? Well, if you happen to be the person's manager, you can give them feedback. Because feedback is the mechanism in which you change people's behaviors, and improvement in people's behaviors leads to better performance, leads to better productivity. This podcast is not about how to give feedback. There's actually a lot of information out there, if you want to look at it, podcasts about giving feedback. I'm probably going to do a podcast on that in sometime in the future, but that's not what today's is. The feedback you give to the receptionist, however, differs dramatically from the question you ask yourself as her manager, because the feedback you give to her concentrates only upon the behavior. So what you have seen and what you have heard. You're not interested in going into why. Because as soon as you go into why did you frown, you're entering into, you've lost as a manager, in the sense, because there's always reasons why people do something. So, but as I said, feedback and how we do that and the language you use for it is for another podcast. I want to go on to now to talk about the reasons to be cheerful. This is the title of a record by Ian Dury. Came out in 1979. For those of you like me, are sufficiently old to remember such records. And it really, I want to talk about, you know, what makes this second receptionist smile and be happy and be cheerful. And maybe why the first receptionist was not cheerful. First of all, reasons to be cheerful. Why, as the individual person, why do you want to be cheerful and happy at work? One of the reasons, and one of the biggest reasons, is the joy of giving. Now, this is no exaggeration. What I mean is that whenever you give something, and in this case the second receptionist is giving me a very good experience by her smiling at me, when you give, the joy of giving is fantastic. I'm sure you all know that at Christmas time, for instance, or at any religious festival, for the people who are listening to this who don't celebrate Christmas, when you give presents, the joy of giving presents is much more than the joy of receiving them. And the thing is, at work, in the professional environment, the world has changed. In the 1970s in particular, there was a big push for managers and for leaders to acquire power and to keep it and to try to use the power of their position to make people do things. But the world has changed now. The world has changed for lots and lots of reasons. There are lots of books out there that talk about it. But one of the reasons is that information flows much faster and around the world now. So if someone is not, I wouldn't say a pleasure to work with, because that's exaggerating, but if someone is very difficult, if a boss is nasty, is unfair, this information gets out. It either gets out on Facebook, it gets out in other social networks, people talk to each other, and this information gets out. So you can't hide anymore. In the past, you could hide, but now you can't. So remember, the joy of giving is a fantastic experience. And if we look at these two receptionists, one of the reasons that the first one did not give and the second one did give is because possibly they haven't been appreciated. A lot of psychologists have been working on, you know, what makes human relationships work and so on and so forth for thousands of years. And they always come up with different theories and reasons. And that's why at work, you cannot improve other people's relationships. You can improve your own relationship, but you cannot become, as a manager, you cannot become a relationship manager for two people who work for you. It's too difficult. People have been doing it for thousands of years, and we still can't get it right. But one of the things which all psychologists agree on is that the deepest principle in human nature is the craving to be appreciated. The deepest principle in human nature is the craving to be appreciated. So do you see how these two things are going together, the joy of giving and the appreciation? Let's remember our receptionist. Maybe the receptionist who's frowning, it's because she's not enjoying her job. She's not coming to work looking forward to giving part of herself to the new visitors, because she simply does not feel appreciated. Now, maybe her manager hasn't gone to her and said, thank you for welcoming our visitors in the way in which you do. When you do that, it makes the whole experience for the visitor excellent. If they're a client of ours, they'll want to do more work with us. Please continue. They haven't had that appreciation for what they do. And the thing about this is that this is nothing new. You all know that what I'm saying is correct. Sometimes when I give conferences, not so much conferences, when I give keynote speeches, and in fact I'm going to do one this Thursday evening, and I go to it, and particularly when I'm doing it in Italian, so my second language, some people say to me, Mark, are you not nervous? And I say, no, I'm not. And it's not because I feel really confident about my language. It's because I know the things I'm going to say to people, they already know. The idea of appreciating other people, the joy of doing that for yourself, the benefit for yourself and the benefit for them, everyone knows this is true. It's not something which has only just become evident. I'm going to quote from a book here, Dale Carnegie's book, And he says this about this particular idea of being appreciated. He says that it's as old as history. Zoroaster taught it to his followers in Persia 2,500 years ago. Confucius preached it in China 24 centuries ago. Lao Tzu, the founder of Taoism, taught it to his disciples in the Valley of the Han. Buddha preached it on the bank of the Holy Ganges 500 years before Christ. The sacred books of Hinduism taught it among the stony hills of Judea 19 centuries ago. Jesus summed it up in one thought, probably the most important rule in the world: do unto others as you would have others do unto you. And I'm sure in all of the other religions of the world, or all of the philosophies of life, which is what more Taoism and Buddhism is, you have exactly the same types of teaching. So this is nothing new. It's just that for some reason we've forgotten it a little bit. And we're separating too much our professional and our private lives. So what can you say and do about it? What can you say and do about it? Well, the first thing is not to wait. You don't need to be the CEO of a company before you start to put into practice this joy of giving, this appreciation of other people. You can do it straight away. And it can be done in very simple little words. Please. Thank you. Could you please type this letter for me? Could you please call client X about our next order? These please and thank yous, could you please, would you mind? These little courtesies are, as again Dale Carnegie says, they are the oil which oil the clogs of the monotonous grind of everyday life. They're important little things to do, and they don't take very much. And I know at work it can be stressful and you can forget. I do it often. But just to remind yourself that to be highly successful, you're going to have to appreciate others, especially those that have helped you on your right way, of course. Another example, at dinner. Particularly if you're having an interview for a job over dinner. And this obviously only happens at higher level jobs. But if you're being taken to dinner, make a point of being highly courteous to the waiter or waitress. Because the other person watching you will be watching and looking to see how you behave with this other person. Because how someone behaves with a waiter or waitress is exactly the same as how they're going to behave in their new role. But the most important part of all of what I've been saying, and probably a lot of what you may be thinking, is the most important part is that you have to be sincere. If you are insincere when you say thank you or please, or when you ask someone how are you, if you are insincere, people will see it immediately. Immediately. The human race is very highly attuned to this difference. But if you are sincere, if you ask how are you and you truly mean it, then these people will do anything for you. And the fantastic thing about this is being sincere is a choice. You can choose to be sincere or you can choose to be insincere. Just like you can choose to run a meeting effectively or to run it ineffectively. Just like you can choose to be professional in a presentation or be unprofessional in a presentation, you can choose whether to be sincere or not when you communicate with other people. It's a choice. And thank God it's a choice. Because, you know, if you had to go to school to learn it for 6 months, and it would be difficult to learn, we'd all be in a great deal of trouble. But it's a simple choice. And it's not even like learning to be effective. When you learn to be effective, say running an effective meeting, you have to learn certain techniques. You have to learn them and put them into practice. Being sincere, you all know how to be sincere. You don't need me to help you with that. So it's a choice. And that's good, it's a choice. And doing this is going to enhance both your professional and also your private life. This separation that we have between private and professional life in terms of our behavior really needs to change. I live in Italy, and Italians are wonderfully passionate people. And it's almost quite strange that an Englishman, you know, with our reserved sort of idea that an Englishman is very reserved and so on and so forth, is trying to coach Italians on this type of sincerity and passion in the professional world. But what seems to happen is, and this is not common only in Italy, it's common around the world, is that we choose not to take all the techniques that we have learned to build up relationships with family, with friends, with lovers, from our private life, and we choose not to take those skills into our professional life. We think for some reason in the professional world, it's very different. And maybe in the past, 30 years ago, it was. Now it has changed. And the separation in terms of our behavior between private and professional life is no longer so great. So in terms of a visual, and I hate these cultural stereotypes, I don't really believe them, but from a joking point of view, you need to have the visual of an Englishman's formal politeness with an Italian's passion and sincerity. If you can combine those two things, then you're going to be successful. And, you know, what does successful mean? That's a big question. I don't really want to enter into that. And it's also very subjective. But I tell you what you can do. If you choose to be sincere, if you choose to appreciate people, if you choose to use all the skills that all of you know very well from your private life and take them into your professional life, you can change the life of people around you. You can make a difference. And I want to very quickly give you two examples taken from two different books just to end this podcast, to just to show the difference you can make. The first one is taken from a book by Tim Sanders. It's called Saving the World at Work. It's a fantastic book. And this is an example he talks about at the end of this book. And it is an event which took place after a conference that he gave, where he was talking about if people are important to you and you haven't given them sufficient recognition in the past 3 months, shame on you. If you've reduced your relationships to emails, shame on you. If you acted like this toward your children, I would tell you that you were not a good parent. If you did this to your friends, I would tell you you're not a good friend. If this is your management style, I would tell you you're not a good manager. He asked people at the end of this, that's what he said at the end of the speech, and he asked people to give him feedback. And a few days later, he received an email from someone, and he says, I'll call him Steve. And Steve admitted to being exactly guilty of doing these things, that he'd been a manager and he had 9 software engineers who reported to him. They all worked in the same building, and he had not had a face-to-face, a one-to-one meeting with them in the last 3 months. He'd become basically an email and instant messaging manager. He hadn't praised anyone, he hadn't told anyone they were very good, hadn't appreciated what their work had happened. The Tim Saunders told him to immediately change this, go out and, you know, tell these people that he recognizes their achievements. And about a week later, Steve wrote back to Tim and told him a story. Steve, and from now on I'm going to read directly from the book. I'll try and do it quickly. And you should read it yourself, but this is from the book, and I hope Tim won't mind me doing this. Okay, 2 days later, one of his engineers, whose real name he disguised as Lenny, entered Steve's cubicle just as Steve was arriving at work, carrying a box wrapped in brown paper and topped with a bow. Lenny told Steve he wanted to give him a gift. Steve unwrapped the box and found a remarkable prize, an Xbox gaming system and a copy of a football video game. But it wasn't his birthday or a special occasion. And Steve hadn't given Lenny a rise, an increase in payment, in salary, for as long as he could remember. So Steve asked Lenny where he got the extra money for such a lavish gift. Lenny looked at him straight in the eye and said words no manager ever expects to hear. I sold my chrome-plated 9mm semi-automatic. Lenny told Steve that though he had worked for the company for 2 years, in all that time Steve had never asked Lenny a single question about himself. Lenny had moved to town from Denver the day after he buried his mother, who had died suddenly. Lenny's mother was his only close friend and only real confidant. She understood my nerdy ways, he said. So Lenny moved to a new city and took a job at a company where he thought he would find other nerds and make new friends. But, he said, people here aren't very friendly. No one ever speaks to me in the halls or the lunchroom. I've worked here for 2 years, and no one would even notice if I died. I don't have a single friend in the company. I come in every day, log in, and spend my life looking at computer screen. Then he said that his only friend in the world was the internet. And so he looked to the internet, his friend, for solutions, and found them. Suicide chat rooms, he said. They are filled with other people just like me, and they told me what to do. And he goes on to talk about the first step to buy a gun, make it so beautiful you want to come home and work with it every day. Lenny had saved up for months to buy this chrome-plated 9mm pistol, which he stored in a wonderful cigar box. Every night when he got home from work, he opened the box and looked at the gun. A few months later, he started the next step, which is to put on the right mood music at home when he gets home, and to say hello to the gun. The following steps I don't want to talk about, to be honest with you, but basically it gets to the point where Lenny is very, very close to committing suicide using that gun. Lenny then says that he was almost there. He was very close to pulling the trigger. And then the other day, Lenny continued, you freaked me out. You came to my workplace, you put your sweaty arm around me, and you told me that you admired the fact that I turned in every project one day early, and it helped you sleep at night. You also told me I had an incredible sense of humor, and that I made the whole group laugh when times were stressful. Lenny said that he went home that night. He did the same routine with the music and the gun. And suddenly, he, for the first time, he felt scared. Scared to die. At that moment, he was off the program to learn how to commit suicide. The next day, he called in sick at work. He went out. He sold the gun. With the money from the gun, he bought the Xbox because he remembers that Steve had been complaining over email, of course, that his financial controller at home, his wife, wouldn't let him buy the Xbox gaming system because they had a new baby. Lenny said, with tears streaming down his cheeks, "Sir, in exchange for my life and my soul, this gift is for you." That's a powerful example, all right? And I hope none of you get to that stage, of course. But it's an idea that, you know, you can change people's lives with what you do at work. Another example, a little bit lighter, but just as powerful, that what we've been talking about actually works. George Eastman, of Kodak fame, invented the transparent film that made motion pictures possible. He amassed a fortune, became a multi-billionaire. To illustrate this, he built a school of music. He helped many, many charities in the country in which he worked, and was an extremely powerful man. One day, an architect came to talk to Mr. Eastman about a job, a role. And when the architect arrived, he was told by the assistants of Mr. Eastman that he needed to get his conversation bottom line first and get it done and finished within 5 minutes, because Mr. Eastman is a very strict, very busy man. He wants to know the story very quickly and then you get out. When the architect was asked into the room, he saw Mr. Eastman bending over a pile of papers at his desk. When Mr. Eastman, this very powerful man, looked up, removed his glasses and walked towards the architect, he said, "Good morning. What can I do for you?" and shook his hand. At that point, the architect said, "While I've been waiting for you, Mr. Eastman, I've been admiring your office. I wouldn't mind working a room like this myself. I love interiors which are made of wood, and I've never seen a more beautiful office in all my life." This very powerful man, Mr. Eastman, replied, "You remind me of something I had almost forgotten. It is beautiful, isn't it? I enjoyed it in a great deal when it was first built, but now I come down here with a lot of other things on my mind and sometimes don't even see the room for weeks at a time." The architect went on to talk about the room, the architecture within it. Mr. Eastman would then describe where some of the oak came from to make the oak paneling. And they became very, very close friends. And guess who got the order, of course? This example is taken from Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People, a book which has sold over 16 million copies, by the way. So, to put it onto one sense, from a language point of view, words which are very simple, you don't need to study English for 10 years to know them. Please, thank you, could you please, these things are key. Appreciating people is also key if you're a manager, no matter what their level is. And even if you're not a manager yet and not an executive, you can start appreciating the people who work around you. Don't separate your professional and your personal life so much. Thank you very much for listening. I hope you've found this podcast useful and enjoyed it a little way. Please, as I say, put into action some of the things that you've heard today. If only the one about if you see someone in the corridor who looks lost, ask them if you can help. Or if you happen to be a receptionist and you're listening to this podcast, try to make sure you smile. If you happen to be the manager of a receptionist, make sure you tell them tomorrow that you appreciate the work they do for the company and the difference that they make. Do these things. Become more professional. Become more effective and become more successful. And in the shape of doing all that, become happier, because that's the important thing. Thank you for listening. I look forward to talking to you again next week. Goodbye.